You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy. In this episode, we're going to be talking about some things that might be a little hard for some people to hear because we're focusing on trauma. So there might be some traumatic events that are discussed that could be problematic for some people. So just listen carefully if this is one that you might have concerns about, whether it would impact you negatively, or if you really think that it might not be so great for you, go ahead and skip it until you're ready for it at another time. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mom and Doc Talk. I'm really just so honored and excited to have a very good friend of mine back to talk to us. She joined us previously in an episode, I don't remember the number, but she talked to us all about highly sensitive people. And we touched a teeny bit on the topic that we're going to talk about today, which is trauma. And I'm just so excited to have her back because she's just a wealth of information. And this is such an important topic when we're talking to the Pans Pandas community, because let's just face it, I mean, Pans and Pandas is a traumatic thing to experience. And people are living with this trauma day in and day out, and it affects the entire family. So I feel like this is just such a vital thing that we are able to tackle to help families really get to the point of like fully recovering and being able to get to the place where they're thriving. So I guess I should introduce you to her. So this is Dr. Karen Lamb. She is a naturopathic medical doctor and licensed professional counselor specializing in trauma healing, burnout recovery, and mind-body wellness. With a deep understanding of the highly sensitive person experience, she blends natural medicine with evidence-based psychological therapies to help her patients restore balance and vitality. Trained in EMDR, mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy, and dialectical behavioral therapy, Dr. Lamb is passionate about addressing the root causes of emotional and physical imbalances. Through her practice at Pura Vida Natural Medicine, she empowers individuals to heal, build resilience, and achieve lasting well-being. And she's just such an amazing human, and I'm so excited to have her. So welcome, Dr. Lamb.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. We had so much fun last time. So even though it's a heavy topic, I think that I'm really excited about it because it's so important. I agree with everything you said about this being such a critical topic for this population.
Yeah. For so many people, really, you know, and that's all we do is we're just going to invite you to talk about all the easy things, right? Highly sensitive people, trauma, you know, like just the easy stuff.
I mean, I am kind of in love with all of those things. So it works, as odd as that is, but you know, we all have our callings, I guess.
Right.
We got so much good feedback from the community, especially moms, from your first one. So I'm really glad that you're back. This is like another one of those pieces where it's just kind of there brewing in the background and nobody really talks about this part of it. And there's not a lot of help for families as they're going through it. So I'm really grateful that you're back to have some more of this conversation.
Yeah.
And we reached out to our community, in our Facebook group, and we told them we were going to be interviewing you, and we got so many questions. I didn't even send them all to you. So we might have to see, we tried our best to condense them to like what they were, but this is clearly something that people really need to hear about. So, but before we dive into all those specific questions, you've been with us before, and there's probably a lot of people who'd missed that episode because we've got a lot of new listeners along the way. So for anybody who might've just recently found us, tell us a bit more about yourself, how you found your way to counseling and naturopathic medicine, and why you love all this hard stuff.
I really do think I was just born to do this, which sounds odd, but it makes me so happy that I can't imagine doing anything else. I think that's the fastest, simplest answer. I've always been really deeply curious about healing and healing professions. And I knew early on that I wanted to have relationships with the people that I worked with. That was really important to me. I knew that relationship was, without really knowing it, now I can label it as, in my opinion, the most important healing modality in my tool bag, if you will. And so back then I just felt really drawn to that. And I just kept hearing insurance was making it really impossible to really be able to do that. And so that took me to counseling, even though medicine was always the idea. And I loved it. And then I started to, again, in hindsight, 2020, you know, I can't say that I knew I was a highly sensitive person because one, the research hadn't been done yet when I was a child. But I was a highly sensitive child and then a highly sensitive adult. And I just knew that conventional things didn't work for me in the way that they did for other people. And so while I was counseling, I saw that in the people that I was working with. I was working with a really highly traumatized population at the time. And many of the people that I was working with, again, didn't know this at the time, but they all fit the criteria for highly sensitive people. And they just kept getting over-medicated. And you know the story. It was a really terrible situation for them. And so one day somebody said, hey, you should really look into naturopathic medicine. And I was like, oh, what is this? And so it was love at first sight. You know, it was, I could have a relationship with the people that I was working with. It gave me access to so many other modalities that were limited for me in the counseling world. And so as I went through my training, I started to understand that my biological and therapeutic needs were different, and there were answers for that. You know, starting with homeopathy, that was one of my very first experiences that rocked my world in the best way possible. Also, aggravations that were rough, but you know, we got through it. and then herbs and nutrition and all of these things that, you know, as sensitive people, we have to address these really simple but impactful things for our physiology, because once those are off, we become so much more susceptible, as we're going to talk a lot about. Susceptibility and trauma is huge. Susceptibility and everything, right? Like that's kind of the key. That's kind of how it all unfolded. And like I mentioned, there's nothing else that I'd rather do. It's just, I really feel like this is where I am supposed to be. And I am so honored to be able to do this work, because it fuels me in a way that allows me to show up in meaningful ways for people and making a difference.
It's meant to be. Like, both of you guys are just supposed to be here.
Well, and that's probably part of why our paths crossed, right?
Right, right.
I have to just acknowledge upfront that you're meant to be here, and you've just got some sort of special skill. I don't know, but like, I mean, I've told you before, and I think I've said it, I might have even said it on the last time you're on the podcast, but like, I hold you responsible for the fact that I was able to get pregnant. And it was because of a single EMDR session with you to help me process both the trauma of my miscarriages and the grief and trauma, like little t trauma, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, of not thinking I was actually going to become a mother, because it was my last attempt before I was just like, I had to call it quits at some point. And then I got to a place where you were, I this is another thing I should give you credit for. I talk so frequently on this podcast and in our Facebook group about control and how feeling like we need to control everything creates so much more suffering. And the more we let go of control, the easier life is, and the more accessible healing tends to be. And it was in that session that with you, that I credit my pregnancy to, that I changed from the beginning, from being angry that I couldn't control things to feeling relieved that I couldn't control things.
I remember that.
So it's just you, I want everybody to just realize, anybody who's listening to this, turn it up, take notes. This is a woman who is like, she is good at this. She is meant to do this. And she's got something special. So I wanted to give her and her information and her knowledge to you guys as a gift of the community, because I just you think you have so much to offer. Anyway, let's move on to actually offering
chills. So many chills. So good. Okay, let's talk about trauma.
Yeah, let's jump in.
It's really hard to stay on topic here.
No. I'll keep us on topic. Let's start with a little bit of kind of information, a little bit of learning. How does inflammation affect trauma and vice versa?
This is such a fantastic topic, and I was super excited to see this question, because one, no one talks about it really. It's out there, but it's not a really commonly discussed interplay. And it's so relevant, especially as we're seeing inflammation rise and rise and rise and rise. So it's relevant for all people, but it's particularly interesting. And I'm excited to chat with you and your perspectives on this with the Pans and Pandas community, because as I was thinking about the question, one, it's like a vicious cycle, right? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Again, the susceptibility conversation, which we'll get into more as we go through everything we have to talk about or want to talk about today. But if inflammation happens first, then we become more susceptible to trauma, because inflammation uses up all of our resources in our bodies. Inflammation is all hands on deck. We have a crisis and we have to manage this crisis. The extent of the inflammation, of course, depends on the severity of the prompting event. But the more resources are being used for inflammation, so the more significant or widespread the inflammation is, the more depleting it becomes. And I like to think of trauma as any experience that overwhelms our capacity to cope. So it doesn't matter if it appears to be a simple interaction with someone, right? Like a third person is witnessing this and they're like, oh, I didn't really notice anything happen. It doesn't matter. If we are internally under-resourced, energetically, nutritionally, psychologically, environmentally, whatever it is, if we are under-resourced and that interaction overwhelms our ability to respond to that event, we are now susceptible to have some sort of injury come from that. And that's where trauma arises, right? So sometimes it's big, sometimes it's hardly noticeable, but if we are so under-resourced that, you know, the wind blows, and I kind of chuckle at that because for sensitive people, it can feel that way. You know, you wake up, you're going about your day, and it's like this little breeze knocks us off our balance. And then it's a domino effect. But with trauma and inflammation, this can happen when inflammation starts first. So the soldiers or the, you know, the response to this perceived threat causing the inflammation uses up all of our vitamins and nutrients, and then and energy, and then leaves us really depleted. And then we have some prompting event that may not seem that huge, but we're, depending on how under-resourced we are, can lead to an actual trauma. And I want to differentiate that, because if the opposite is true, if you're feeling super resourced, even with underlying inflammation, right? If you're tending to your resources and you have a prompting event, trauma is not an obvious outcome, like it can be for many people. Go ahead.
So it's, I love that you bring up susceptibility, because I talk about this so frequently, and you know, so everybody, just obviously upfront, Dr. Lam and I are both big fans of both therapy and homeopathy, and the two tend to work synergistically in certain circumstances. There's some places where you need to get certain things taken care of first before you can really be effective, especially in Pans Pandas. We'll talk about that in a bit. But I always talk about how trauma itself is not just like this universal thing, right? That like you can have 10 people experience the exact same event and 5 people walk away without any sort of traumatic remnants from it. And then the other 5 people might have trauma of varying degrees and different symptoms and different intensities. And that's where the susceptibility comes in, whether you're susceptible for this to impact you significantly and then susceptible with how it impacts you. So obviously having an inflammatory process happening, like it overflows your cup. Anybody who missed the cup metaphor episode, we'll put a link to that in here as well. So inflammation in general overflows your cup. And so if your cup is already overflowing, you just don't have the resources to respond to trauma in a way that is productive for you to process through it. It works in the reverse though too, right?
Yes.
So you're doing well and your cup is not overflowing and you have a traumatic event, and it can actually trigger an inflammatory response, right?
Yep. Yeah. So that's when things can become a vicious cycle, mm-hmm. right? If the trauma happens first and then you become under-resourced because of that, mm-hmm. Or also the neurological inflammation that happens with trauma. I mean, we know it's inflammation is linked to depression. We know that it's linked to chronic, obviously infectious, you know, issues that happen involving the nervous system. And those things can then tie back to trauma. So then we get this circle, this vicious cycle of trauma, inflammation, and kind of a compounding trauma response due to the continued effect on the physiology.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of the people that tend to have, it's almost like trauma finds them or bad things tend to find them, but it's almost like it's part of that cycle. Yeah. It's not necessarily that bad things find the same people over and over. It's that they're already primed to have a really hard response yes. to it. And so then add to that, as I'm reading, hopefully some of the Pans, Pandas, Parents minds, you add to that the doctors who don't believe you. And then you have the bad things that have happened to you multiple times. And then you get medical child abuse is what we're calling it now instead of Munchausen by proxy accusations that are so common in the Pans Pandas community, which then just adds another hit to the whole cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jody, you look like you have something to say.
No, I'm just sitting here thinking about that literal exact experience and how when it happened, I was like, oh, I'm fine. It's not that big of a deal. And I think it bothers me more now than it used to bother me.
Yeah.
Just kind of reliving it and almost like feeling like shocked that that actually happened. And I was in a really not okay space back then.
You know, I'm just realizing we don't have a lot of questions on here about suppressed trauma, the impacts. So we're probably gonna have to add in some questions about suppressed trauma and the impacts that, you know, Jody just triggered in my mind. So we'll see where we can fit that. I'm gonna take a little note here as I'm letting you go into the next question, which is, we've sort of touched on this already, which is like big T trauma versus little T trauma, which a lot of people use. So can you explain how people are using that and how that relates to what you just shared about that cycle?
Yes. So big T's are what most people think of when they think of trauma. And I think this conversation is shifting, and I'm really happy about that because there is an increased awareness around trauma. Historically, it was war, significant and really maybe even acute and traumatic losses, right? Like unexpected losses. I think loss of loved ones is always difficult, but something like a car accident or a sudden heart attack or, you know, something that stops your life in its tracks in a completely different way, or rape or, you know, violence that is really acute. But little T's are more subtle. Chronic stressors. So really relevant for our conversation today. It's very relevant in my work with sensitive people because we as sensitive people tend to have a lot of nutritional deficiencies due to the fact that we are perceiving so much data all of the time. You know, we're hearing things that other people don't hear. We're feeling things that other people don't feel. And so we're constantly having to discern, is this safe? Is this unsafe? So it's tapping into the adrenal system. It's tapping into, you know, my cognitive abilities, my subtle spiritual body or energetic body. You know, there's so many different takes on it. But the idea is that we're working really hard in ways that are difficult to quantify. And so we have that susceptibility, right? But that also happens with having these low, subtle, chronic stressors, like your moms have as a mom, period. Mm-hmm. And then also in having a child that they're tending to in this way. So little T's are now understood to actually have a greater impact than more adverse effects than acute big T's because of the cumulative effect that they have. They also tend to have a lack of recognition. So therefore, there's a lack of support around it. It's just this low-lying thing that's happening for long periods of time. And this can happen with children or obviously adults. And the thing that's really interesting and complicated about little T's is that when you have no support and you don't have any validation for the fact that this is happening, we are as humans very prone to blaming ourselves. And when that happens, it can start to shift our core beliefs about ourselves. So things like, what's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me, or I am inadequate. And these are really fundamental aspects of how we navigate life. And so if it starts to change how we see ourselves, you know, when there's a big T, we can say that happened.
Right.
That happened. And maybe there's survivor's guilt. Maybe there's, you know, some other elements that can be complex and natural, normal aspects of the grieving process. But usually you can work through that pretty easily. Core beliefs shifting require a lot of attention. And it has a deep impact on our quality of life, which is why now they're really understanding why these little T's are worth the conversation.
Yeah. I just have to say, everything you just said is so validating, because I've had both little T traumas and big T traumas in my life. And the big T traumas did not affect me in as profound a way as the little T traumas did. And I definitely went through all of that feeling like I was crazy. There was something wrong with me. Why can't I get past this? Why can't I let this go? This wasn't even that big of a deal. Everything is fine. You know, all those things. Is in some ways like kind of gaslighting myself. And I had conversations with mental health providers where I'm like, I realize I don't meet the criteria for PTSD, but my body doesn't seem to understand that because it's doing all the things for PTSD. I just don't have the quote unquote right trauma to get the diagnosis. So tell my body it's not supposed to be doing this. Do whatever you need to do to make it not do this thing that it's doing, but it's doing it. So I really appreciate that, one, you're validating this, because I assure you that for 100% of the parents listening to this who have a child with PANS or PANDAS, they have little T traumas every single day. 100%. Some of them also have big T traumas as a result of PANS and PANDAS, but every single one has a little T trauma multiple times a day. For an extended period of time.
Yes. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was just thinking about. It's like you were talking about that whole thing where we had a mom say one time, PANS is the ultimate gaslighter. And it really is, because every day you feel like, wait, did I exaggerate that in my mind? Or is this really happening? And then somebody questions it. And it's like that thing that's not, like, I don't think as parents, as we're moving through it, we think about that as our own trauma, but it absolutely is. So let's talk about our kiddos for a second. How, as parents, do we know if our kids are experiencing trauma?
So this is the question that got me even more excited about this conversation, because there is so much overlap between the symptoms of trauma and the PANS and PANDAS picture, which then got me thinking, it got me really curious about your perspectives on how this, what the interplay is with the inflammation and PANS and PANDAS. And I just thought to myself, these symptoms are so similar. And of course, some of it is the infection. And, you know, I talk a lot about how it's hard for me to really buy into diagnosis in many ways, because so many times it's a general alarm, you know, that's like something is not right. So I just wanted to add that, because of course that's trauma is doing that. You know, if you've got some of these symptoms like anxiety and fearfulness, aggression, sleep disturbances, headaches, stomach aches, sensory sensitivities that weren't there before, and just difficulty dealing with relationships or daily life, all of those can be a sign of quote unquote stress. But we also see so much of that with pans and pandas. And so I thought, this is a great opportunity to have two people that know so much about this. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it can be hard to draw the line, right? Like usually with a pans pandas, we know that there is an infectious onset, right? Yeah. And like, because these kids are so young, in most cases, it's pretty clear if there was a big, usually it's a big T trauma, not a little T trauma, unless they've been chronically ill before pans and pandas came as an onset. So usually it's actually pretty clear in these kids, if there's a, if there's a trauma etiology, that's usually not a question. The question right. really comes up more of like, some of these kids end up having like they're traumatized by the experience itself. And so it's usually more that trauma compounds the challenges for these kids. Yeah. And from a homeopathic perspective, when I start to tell people that we need to be looking at other therapies for, or we might be needing to look at like the trauma component for this or some other thing, is when we have reached a point that we're seeing enough evidence from the body that the inflammation is down and it's reduced and it's mm-hmm. not clearly strictly inflammation mediated. Mm-hmm. But we've got some things that are really persisting that could be explained by trauma, and that trauma therapies can be very effective for. And that's when we find the synergistic magic, because the truth of the matter mm-hmm. is that you can't therapy away, you know, inflammation. You can't. And mm-hmm. so if inflammation is the main driver, you have to get the inflammation into check before, and like the process, the susceptibility to inflammation and all that has to be better balanced. It doesn't have to be completely gone. Like we live in an inflammatory world. We're going to deal with a certain amount of inflammation on a pretty regular basis. But it needs to be in check so that there's even a chance that the therapy can be effective. And so somebody can engage with it in a way that they can really internalize the work that they're doing and make those connections that they need to make. So what you're saying is, from your perspective, it's not really 100% clear for parents.
It can be really tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really tricky. I love what you said about the inflammation decreasing, you know, and that's why the team component is so critical,
yeah.
you know, especially for complex pictures, because then you can have somebody keeping an eye on something.
Yeah.
Precisely,
yeah.
without you having to be the one holding all the things, because that's what moms do all the
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think about, so one of the things I sort of look at to see if I think trauma therapy might be the most effective next thing to add in, if I do think that somebody is dealing with that, I'm looking for some of the signs like reflecting on past events a lot, where it comes mm-hmm. up either like as part of their anxiety or showing up in dreams, those like the typical presentations that you see with PTSD, with certain things coming back up, as if it's happening now. I'm looking for that kind mm-hmm. of thing that could be related to an event that occurred while, like because of their pans or while they had pans, not necessarily like a clear, like we talked about big T trauma, but that's one of the things that I'm generally looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really great thing to keep an eye out for, because kids do that a lot. Mm-hmm. Children will tell us mm-hmm. what is wrong, right? Like they're really good at that. And they're particularly focused oftentimes on things that feel stuck for them. And, you know, my son had this happen where he, every time he felt sad, he would talk about when we lost one of our dogs. Mm-hmm. Oh, he wouldn't say I'm sad. He would say, I'm really missing Kona. Yeah. I'm really missing, you know, one of our deceased animals. And that really struck me. And so I've seen that, I've heard that a lot from parents where their children, will and also want to tell the story, right? They want, it's a type of narrative therapy for them. So I think that's very unique and different. Yeah.
I like that you brought up the specific story that you did, because another thing that I do think might be trauma related, and I'm hoping you're going to validate me, is when you see a whole lot of grief, and like, so it can be, it's not necessarily remember when this bad thing happened to me. It could also be remember when I missed out on this thing. Remember when somebody said this thing to me or whatever. Like a lot of like grief can also look a lot like trauma in my experience.
Yeah. I think trauma is, I mean, grief by definition is a loss.
Yeah.
And so I think that trauma always comes with loss, always. So a fixation on sadness or a repetitive expression of sadness and grief would be a flag, you know, to pay attention. It doesn't necessarily mean, it could be an emotional growth spurt, you know, where it's just like, okay, I'm exercising these emotions in different ways. But it could also be a sign that we need to pay attention and go deeper.
So being a little bit more persistent would be more indicative that it's something that needs to be explored versus like what you said. Right. I love that. An emotional growth spurt. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, we go through those in our house a lot.
I feel like I'm still trying to figure this out with Avery. And I think that that's probably my answer right there, because whenever she was in homeopathy and healing, you can't tell what is what. And so I feel like I was just like, okay, we're going to get closer to the end and then it'll be clearer whether we're dealing with PANS, as the inflammation was coming down, we're dealing with PANS or we are dealing with trauma. And I'm still having this conversation in my head regularly, because while Avery is recovered from PANS, you know, the parts of Avery that I don't want homeopathy to change, the fact that she's like her dad, she's a little bit more, I say type A is not a bad thing. She's just a little more like higher strung. She's a little more serious and regimented. Homeopathy didn't change any of that, and I don't want it to. But there are times where I feel like she is, I'm going to go backwards for just a second. Avery doesn't remember anything from PANS at all. Nothing. Thank you, homeopathy, so much for that. But she has zero memory of it. She was like, I would say 5 to 8 or 9, zero memory. And she hears me talk about it and she's like, that doesn't even feel like my life. But then now with Avery being, you know, having her personality, being a little bit more anxious of a person, I see things happen where I'm like, oh, like in me, my own trauma is like, oh, this looks so much like PANS. She has a specific thing that she goes back to talking about. And I'm like, oh, that's trauma that we need to address. I feel like even though she doesn't remember anything, that some of the ways that she experiences things now is trauma from back then, because it kind of has some of the same theme, which again, I say is my answer, that she does need to be doing therapy. And this, you know, there are pieces of this that stay in their bodies and they go back to.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense for me. And I just feel like I need to interject really quickly to just say, just because trauma exists in a person does not mean that homeopathy alone isn't going to be effective. I've seen homeopathy alone help lots of people process trauma because it addresses their susceptibility, and that's what they are, what works for them. So homeopathy alone can address trauma. It's not that if you have any aspect of trauma that you have to add an additional therapy. It does tend to work really well together. And there are some people that do need therapy to be able to get to the, across the finish line. And so if you think this might be part of what's going on for you and your kiddo, it's a good thing to have a conversation about with your providers, your various providers, of what might be going on. And if this additional consideration would be useful to look at.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I am so glad that you mentioned that, Jody, because the mom's perspective, you know, like the fact that you keep revisiting it, the fact that you keep coming back to it, that isn't a tool of assessment, right? You know your child so well. And if it's something that keeps coming up in your mind, just check it out, right? Like, you can work with someone and take some of that off of your plate to have to be managing, because we always think that I don't know that we think, we just do. Like we're just doing, you know, we're just showing up for our kids in the way that they need us to. And that translates to a tremendous responsibility. And so just as much for you as it is a resource for Avery, I think it makes sense to just check it out, you know, find someone that you connect with well, that they connect with well, and make sure that it's a good fit. And then they'll help you understand, is this something that we need to pursue or not? And then it takes it off of your plate. And it's one thing you don't have to think about all of the time in the way that you do, so that you can protect yourself, mm-hmm. right? From the continued drain of this thing that happened how long ago now?
Yeah. Many, many years.
Yeah. It's still, like she doesn't remember it, and it's still, you know, depleting you. So having partners, having communities, it's not even just about giving your children the treatment that they potentially need. It's also for your benefit and your protection in preserving your resources.
I'm going to take us off track for just a second, because I'm thinking this, so I know other parents are thinking it. This is likely my own trauma talking. It makes me worried that having her, I'm worried about taking her back to a place she doesn't remember, even though I know her body likely remembers some of it.
Yeah. It's a great question. I love that you're thinking about that. It shows your intentionality, you know, in what you introduce into her life. And that is wonderful. And she's very lucky to have you in that regard. If you find the right fit, they don't have to go back and talk about the specific targets.
That's true.
At all. It's all about what's happening today, you know, and if it, and remember, it can just be an assessment like, hey, we went through this really, really tough thing. She has no recollection of it. She's healed, you know, everything worked out really well. And every now and then I see these things that make me think that maybe she needs some extra support, or there are some extra things that can be digested for her, in processed in therapy, and then say, can you help me figure this out? Like, we're not necessarily committed to this big, long thing. It can also be a matter of Avery finding a therapeutic relationship that works really well for her. Because right now, perhaps things are growing great, but hormones, you know, enter hormones, enter relationships, enter hardships at school or whatever. And now all of a sudden, things that she doesn't actually remember from PANS, you know, or maybe there is some sort of medical trauma, maybe whatever may be lingering in her subconscious might come up in a way that doesn't look like that per se, but it might, once again, it's kind of like under the surface and potentially creating a susceptibility for her when, right? Because it's life, when the next hardship occurs. And so tending to that now can help her to be more resourced, or have a relationship with someone who can help her navigate those things in the future as well. So there's so many positive, potential positive outcomes. And they might even come back and say, she's super well adjusted. And, you know, maybe that then brings you back to yourself of, oh man, I'm still carrying that tremendous load from the traumatic experience that I went through with my child.
Yeah. And the same is true for kids in the middle of the healing journey, I would imagine too. It's a matter of finding that right fit and the right person understands to help, because we did go through that finding the wrong person and it was the opposite of helpful. So same wherever anybody is, whether it's, you know, where Avery's at, where she's doing well, or in the middle of it, finding the right person just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's my like number one recommendation. And I love that your audience knows what that feels like, because I know that resilience provides that, right? Like, not only do you have options for different types of fit is important. It's a priority for you guys. I know that. So, yeah.
And I know that there's probably a bunch of people who are just dying to like get into like, how do we fix this? How do we fix this? What do we do? What do we do? Well, how do we not have to revisit this? And I promise you guys, we will get there. We're probably going to get there in another episode, because we've got so much to talk about. And I want to make sure that we've talked about all of the ways that trauma might show up first before we dive into specifics about therapies. So, and I say this because I don't want us to ignore the moms, which is what I feel like Jody was trying to do, because she's a mom who ignored her trauma for so long and probably still is. So let's first start with how a parent might know that they themselves are experiencing trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad that we're spending time on this, because it is, especially when we have a child in acute need, there is no, I don't want to spend any time thinking about what I need, because that's not the priority, right? Even though it is so critical that we do that, we have to train ourselves to shift back. But that's why we're having this conversation, right? To build awareness so that moms can start to think about, okay, that's happening for me, and that might be important to address. So for adults, one of the first tells that trauma is a consideration is overwhelming emotions. When small things feel really, really massive. And of course, there are massive things that have happened, you know, so we're not talking about that. We're talking about, you know, you drop your keys and you get tearful, or you stub your toe and you just can't go on with the day. And so difficulty managing stress, which is charged because your moms have a lot of stress. Moms generally have a lot of stress, especially when there's a child with a lot of special needs for a period of time. Feeling tired all of the time. I love to use energy measurements as one of my naturopathic vital signs. You know, it's like, it's not a blood pressure. It's not something that's going to kill you, you know, like conventional medicine thinks about. But it's one of the first things that we see start to shift long before those conventional medicine vital signs. So energy, if you start to notice that it's decreasing over time, and just waking up feeling like, how am I going to get out of bed? That's a common symptom of trauma. Obviously, it can be a symptom of many other things, but it's a whole picture situation. Sleep disruption, of course, really, really common with trauma. Feeling hypervigilant. This is actually something that I have seen a lot in the parents of children with PANS and PANDAS. Yes. Oh my gosh, do I smell mold in the house? Oh my gosh. You know, were they exposed to, you know, a tick or, you know, something that could cause their inflammation? Go ahead. It looks
like- it's so sad that it's even to the point that parents will look at an interaction with their child that might be like an otherwise sweet interaction and wonder, oh my God, is this a new ritual or is this a new thing? Mm-hmm. And like, it's like so prominent in the PANS community that I've just started calling it PANS PTSD. I'm like, you might not actually meet the criteria for PTSD, but you got PTSD. It's
yes.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Subtle distortions are a little T experience. Mm-hmm. So when we think of big T's and PTSD, we think of flashbacks, right? Somebody, the war mm-hmm. veteran, that is, here's a car backfire and they're hiding underneath the table in their house. That's a big T flashback. But the little T version of that is these really subtle distortions that are triggered by our hypervigilance and create something out of what otherwise would be this really sweet moment that's stolen from them, right? Because they're not able to be fully present.
So I just want to share with you guys, our listeners, we actually had to pause in the middle of this. It's so appropriate. And I might have to step away again. So we paused because I got a phone call from the school while we were recording. And I managed to hit the wrong button. It went directly to voicemail. And it's the principal calling to tell me that she needs to tell me something about my kid. And I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? So we paused to go get the, so I could call back and find out. The principal's on the phone with somebody else already. And the person who answered just says, I don't know exactly what it is. She wanted to tell you what happened, but I know your daughter has an ice pack on her eye, which is like, what? So of course I'm having my own little reaction here, which thankfully I have a lot of really good resources, so I'm probably not going to end up with little T trauma. That said, I might step away again and I don't want to disrupt the conversation because we were having a really good conversation that you guys will see if our editors are able to get things pieced together in a way that you get really good stuff. They are pretty amazing, but we're going to try and pick back up to complete the thought before we wrap this part of this first part of our conversation, and we'll bring you guys more very soon. So if I need to step away, forgive me, both of you guys and anybody listening, I'll be back. So the good news is what we were talking about and what we need to wrap up talking about is how parents really understand if they're experiencing trauma themselves. And so if I need to step away, you got the parent here to ask all the questions from the parent. So Dr. Lamb, how might a parent understand or know if they themselves are experiencing trauma?
I think the thing to look out for is your state of overwhelm and how easily you feel overwhelmed. So small things creating a really intense physiological response, difficulty managing stress, feeling really tired. I like to use energy as a measure of how resourced somebody is. And these are the small things that start to shift subtly over time, long before we have these huge, you know, conventional medical vital signs happening that can cause more severe physical.
Yeah. So normally a conventional doctor is looking for things that are like, if this is out of range, it could mean death. And you're looking more at like, how are you able to handle these things so we don't get to that point that yes. we're connecting yes. with that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you know you're in a really stressful situation, starting to measure some of these things, these are the things that I talk about in the Thriving Sensitivity Program, you know, how to learn my body's language so that when I'm in a really stressful environment or stressful situation, I already know what my language is. I already know what my body prefers. And then you can start to pay attention to these subtle shifts. And sometimes not so subtle, right? Like if it's not subtle, then we know more than likely there's a susceptibility to trauma. So sleep yeah. disruption is also really common for people experiencing trauma. Being on super high alert all of the time, that hypervigilant state. And with that comes the little t subtle distortions of reality. Having difficulty relaxing, always reading into things. And I think that was one thing that was definitely worth highlighting, which was what we were talking about with PANS and PANDA's parents that are so hypervigilant and they're so concerned about, you know, additional injuries to their children, you know, and trying to protect them and prevent more additional inflammation from happening yeah. for them.
So that's the mom who like smells mold everywhere yeah. and is, or like trying to find a perfectly mold-free environment to live in, or the parent who is so hypervigilant looking for any new tick or any new ritual that like if a kid is got the sniffles, it's like, oh my gosh, is this a tick? And then like getting into that place of like tension and tightness and like the anxiety kicking up because of something that did their kid not have PANS and PANDAS would not be something that would ever catch their attention. Or even in some cases, I've had parents where they've got like a really, really sweet thing that their kid is doing as like a way to say goodnight, like a good night ritual that turns into a place for panic or fear because of, oh my gosh, is this really sweet thing? Is this going to be a new ritual that's starting?
Yes. I've seen in the PANS and PANDAS parents that I've worked with, where they know that it could be part of their trauma, but it's really difficult to stop because the stakes are so high. These are our babies.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, yeah, I'll gladly lose sleep if I can help my child live a happier, healthier life. And I get it. I get it because I've been there. And it's ultimately going to be potentially really damaging to your relationship with your child, which of course can be a health risk for them as well.
So this ties into you were saying before I got interrupted with my school phone call, you were saying something along the lines that the cognitive distortions tend to happen in these more like little T traumas, where you normally think like the flashbacks for PTSD, that the cognitive distortions that can come about, or the was that the right word? Was it cognitive distortions?
That
can come about like almost in place of flashbacks, where you. Yes. And I mean, really, it's kind of like a mini, like a little T flashback, or like a small, because you're like worried about like, oh my gosh, we had mold before. Is there mold back? Is this tick back? And so seeing things slightly differently than they are, or seeing them from the worst possible lens, maybe seeing them as they are, but interpreting it as far more dangerous than maybe it actually is.
Yes. And it's so complicated, because with a big T and a huge flashback, and the example I gave was a war veteran who hears a car backfire and they hide underneath, you know, they find shelter. They're completely dissociated from their reality, right? So there is no, should I, shouldn't I, you know, this back and forth, I don't know what's real or not. It is survival reaction. With little T, subtle, distortions, there's this self-gaslighting that happens, right? Like, am I smelling mold? Did they just do that thing they used to do? You know, and then it's just this constant questioning yourself. And that adds a whole other layer of complexity. So it's really strange how, you know, obviously somebody who has that big T and has those types of flashbacks, very complicated, certainly don't want to minimize that. But it's the way that the little T's wear on us is so underrated. Yeah. It's so difficult to grasp. It's so difficult to quantify. And it's almost impossible to have an objective observation of, oh yeah, that's definitely a distortion. You know, like it's just this big huge gray area that is difficult to navigate alone. And so if you're having these other symptoms of feeling really overwhelmed and chronically tired and having sleep disruptions or feeling hypervigilant, having, you know, seeking out a partner to help you one, discern, you know, am I dealing with PTSD? Mm-hmm. Two, the resource, you know, from that therapeutic relationship to help you navigate those things. But really having an objective party that can say, this is real, is so hugely therapeutic. That validation is so helpful in little T circumstances, because the most damaging thing about little T, traumas is that they go unsupported, they go unrecognized. And so having that therapeutic relationship can help to protect against that susceptibility.
Well, Karen, my friend, I know that we've got to be respectful of your time. And we clearly did not book even nearly enough time to chat with you today. So would you be willing to come back and do actually two more episodes with us? Because we've got this is such an important topic. I want to be able to talk about the complexity that goes into multiple people in houses dealing with trauma, people having to make choices if they got limited resources, that types of thing. And then I want to actually talk about some of the therapies too, just so people have all of the things that they're impacted by with trauma and PANS and PANDAS, that we go like soup to nuts, right? We want to get everything that they could possibly need to make the next right decision for how they get the support that they need. So I would be really grateful to have you come back for two more episodes with us. Would you be willing?
Absolutely. We've got a lot of unfinished business here.
Okay, fantastic. So you guys heard it here. She made a promise to me and I trust her implicitly. So she will be back with even more of this. I hope you guys see now why I asked her to come and talk about this. Like, this is like good stuff, right? Well, good stuff about the bad stuff, but a good way to get us closer to an answer for this really hard thing. So thank you so much, Dr. Lamb, for your time. And I will look very much forward to talking to you again to round out this conversation so that we can get through even more complex stuff than we've already talked about. So thank you so much. Make sure you connect with us. Follow if you haven't already so that you can get the next episodes with Dr. Lam. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for pans and pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.